Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, June 2nd, 2013. This is episode 984. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your direction, like affordable business and personal documents you can trust. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TechGuy to get $10 off at checkout. And by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TechGuy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, or other smartphone is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. This is a show where we help you understand technology,
computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, all that jazz. Phone number, if you would like to call,
you'll be talking to Heather H. 8888 Ask Leo. Easy to remember. Just think of two pianos side by side, like Liberace and his protege, and then side by side, 88 keys each of them. See how easy that is? How straightforward? It's hard, easy to remember. And then Ask Leo. That part's a little harder to remember. Just Ask Leo is all I could say. Just remember that.
Oh, it's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer. Or 888-827-5536.
Did you watch Behind the
Candelabra? Behind the Candelabra, yeah. It was all right. It was interesting. It's gossipy, you know.
The stills look amazing. I haven't seen
it. The only reason I watched it, and a lot of geeks watched it, is because Game of Thrones was preempted by it last Sunday. So we had
we're stuck.
We're sitting there. We're ready for dum da da dum dum da da dum. And then instead we get Behind the Candelabra. It's a little strange. Michael Douglas as Liberace, Matt Damon as his boyfriend.
Well,
watching them make
Kim
out was
said,
a little strange.
Oh, wow. Oh, I can't wait to see that. She said they nailed it, and then I saw that picture of Rob Lowe. Like,
Rob Lowe is worth seeing in that.
I mean, he looks like the mom in Arrested Development.
Well, he plays a plastic surgeon who's had quite a bit himself. And I gather, I don't know, but I'm guessing that they stretched his face back a little bit. And he has long hair to hide the
cheesecloth. Like a ponytail.
Yeah, really tight.
It's a facelift, basically.
It's amazing. It was odd. I'm glad Game of Thrones is back tonight. That's all I can say.
There you go.
8888 Ask Leo. Heather is the gatekeeper. You'll have to get through her. She's Gozer, the keymaster or whatever.
And I'm tough.
And she no, you're very kind.
Pushover.
No, you're not. We will take calls about anything. You know, our digital photographer Chris Marquardt's back. He's in Ireland. He went there for his birthday, and he's going to be on the show at about half past the second hour, 12:33 my time. I don't know what it is your time. 8888 asks, I just deleted Facebook. Not my account. I still have the account, but I deleted it from my phone. Do you use, you're a Facebooker. I know you are. But
yeah,
I've seen you more on Google Plus lately.
Yes, I'm sort of preferring it.
I know, I kind of like it. And now if you use an Android phone especially, it's a natural because you take pictures, they're automatically uploaded privately to Google Plus. I guess it's the same with Facebook.
Oh, okay.
But Google Plus does some interesting things. It'll take, if you take four or five pictures quickly in quick succession, it'll turn them into an animated GIF all of a sudden. Or, yeah, I know.
Oh, GIFs are my favorite thing ever.
By the way, we're making the guy who invented these unhappy when we call them GIFs.
He
was recently honored at the Webby Awards, and he said, would you please call them GIFs?
What a dork. Did you not notice that the word graphic is a hard G?
We
don't say giraffic.
Format.
Like it's a...
Anyway. Graphic.
Right?
Well, I don't think there's any rule that you could follow. English is such a strange... I mean, there's G-I-F-T is gift, but G-I-R-R-A-F-E is giraffe.
Right.
So there's no rule.
But the word in that acronym is
graphics interchange format, GIF.
Ergo, that's what I'm thinking.
You know my philosophy? I get to pronounce it anyway. Yeah, who cares? But I get to pronounce it any way I want because since 1991, I've been about the only person saying these words out loud. Everybody else reads them.
There you
go. So I've decided I'm the determining factor.
You win. I
win.
You're the president of all the internet.
I'm the president of the internet, and I get to say. So if you want to say GIF, go ahead. I'm not going to knock it, but I noticed Heather and I both are saying
peanut butter.
Yeah. It's a graphics file format. But you don't usually turn on the radio and hear people talking about stuff like this. That's why I love this show. And maybe others don't, but that's why I love it. 8888 Ask Leo. Talk to Heather. Now, the reason I ask is I just deleted it from my phone because I read a very interesting article, which I feel to be true, that the Facebook app on iPhone, and I think it's true on Android phone too, drains the battery unusually quickly.
Interesting.
And I've been playing with, I have two new Android phones that are very popular right now, the Galaxy S4 and the HTC One. And the one's doesn't have a replaceable battery. I carry in a little pouch on the back of my Galaxy S4. I carry a little battery because I'm always ready. But the one, you got to make it through the day or plug it in. And so I've been working on getting, and I took off Facebook automatic updates, and it did improve it quite a bit.
Oh, that's
like
good
noticeably.
To know. I feel like I only ever use it when I'm stuck somewhere and I have my phone.
Well, you can have it on your phone and just turn off updates, and then when you want to look at it, update it then. That's fine, right?
Got it.
Why have it be... Apparently, if I just was looking at a chart somebody made, in the background, it's always going out and saying, hey, what's going on? Hey, what's... It's like that annoying neighbor. Hey, what you doing? What's happening? Huh? What's going on? What are your friends doing? Anybody's birthday today? Huh? And it's using up your battery life doing that. So you might want to think about... putting that on hold. I deleted it on my Galaxy S4, but I couldn't on the HTC One because it comes with the phone. You know, that's the other thing I don't like is AT&T and HTC and T-Mobile. Everybody does this. They put applications on there that you can't delete. And on the HTC One from AT&T, it's an undeletable app.
Right. Games is for me on the iPhone.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need
Game
this.
Center.
I've never opened that up.
No. But okay. you can't get rid of it because Apple put it on there and that's the way it is. So if for those of you who can't get rid of Facebook, just to go into the settings and turn off automatic updates. You know, no, just don't don't have it checking. No syncing. In fact, if there's other apps like Twitter, Foursquare that you use that do that, you might turn that off, get battery life.
Oh, my God. You are worth your weight in gold.
I was stunned.
I've really had issues lately.
Yes, of course. Yeah, we all do. We've got these big, powerful, supercomputers in our pockets. And the battery is like, if you can't get through, if you can't get through, 12 hours, it's not enough. Because I don't want to charge it and I want to be able to walk around. 8 hours is not enough. I get up in the morning at 7. I want to unplug it until I go back to bed at 10. What is that? That's 15 hours. That's a long time. I guess 12 is enough. I'd love 15. The other, and somebody in the chat room, Metro the Dog says, here's a good way to improve your battery life. Turn everything off and go for a walk in the forest.
Yeah,
that's not good. I went to the AT&T store with my HTC One. I said, the battery life's terrible. They said, well, just turn off the Bluetooth and the GPS. It'll get much better.
But you want to check in.
What's the point? If I have to, yeah, sure. If I turn off the phone, the battery life's astounding, but I don't. GPS does apparently use a lot, but not as much as Facebook of all things. So it's interesting to see. Email is another battery killer. That's right. Hawaii Dave says that in the chat room. So what you could do is turn down email checks. On the HTC One, it's recommended that you use their email program, which is smarter about battery life than the Gmail or Yahoo Mail programs. And I did do that. I switched over to that, and that helped a lot, too. So there's things you can do. The other thing, and is there's a lot of misinformation about these lithium-ion batteries in our laptops and our smartphones. People say you have to discharge. In fact, I even get it from the manufacturer. It says in the box sometimes, make sure you charge it all the way before you use it, or make sure you fully discharge it before you... No, that's wrong. So you want to maximize a battery life. The best thing to do is keep your phone plugged in or your laptop plugged in all the time, as much as you can, because you get a certain amount of recharge cycles, typically about 500 for the life of the battery in the phone. And every partial charge counts... Not as a full recharge, but they add up to a full recharge. So if you do a third, that's one recharge. That's one cycle. You get 500 of those, 500 charge-discharge cycles. And then the battery just stops working. And if it's something like the HTC One or the iPhone where you can't replace the battery yourself, that's, you know, that's kind of, the battery stops working, you kind of need a new phone, or you're going to spend $100 with Apple to put a new battery in. It's less important on a phone like the Galaxy phones where you can just slip in a battery. Because then if the battery dies, we get another one. But the but this is what the experts in lithium-ion technology say, and it's good for a laptop too. Leave it plugged in when you can. Keeping it fully charged is a good thing. And if you're going to store it for a length of time, they say about half full is the right thing. Hmm? Interesting, huh? Little fact. Facts you can use. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm the tech guy. Why don't you call me? Let's talk, okay? Right after this. Leo LaPointe, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. We're taking the calls. Heather H., the H-bomb. Who should I talk to first here?
Let's go with Michael in Glasgow.
Scotland. He's from Scotland.
Close.
Kentucky? Oh, the other Glasgow.
The accents are a little different.
Hey, Michael Leo. Thanks, Heather. Hey, Michael Leo LaPointe, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I just wanted to start out to saying I used to watch you on Tech TV, and I missed you from there. So
thank you.
I had to say that whenever Twit came up that you joined over there and everything. So
yeah, we replaced Tech TV with I decided I'm going to do this myself. Tech TV was a cable channel that ran for 6 years from 98 to 2004. And when it went under, so did I. Fortunately, I do radio, so that kept me in sandwiches and espressos. But then I said, you know, maybe I should do a kind of Tech TV like thing on the internet. Who needs cable? And we do Twit, and it's actually it's doing quite well. So
yes, it is. My question was about content. I've got a Roku and an Apple TV both, and I usually buy most of my TV and movies from Amazon. But I was thinking about going to iTunes to buy most of it just because of the cost that the iTunes, you know, has for their season passes. They're usually a little bit cheaper than paying $3 per HD episode.
Yeah, and no matter where you're getting it, no matter where you get it, it's going to have copy protection on it. Unlike music, video and movies still have copy protection.
Right.
So the only drawback to buying stuff from the iTunes stores, you have to use an Apple device to play it back. You can't play it back on your Roku. You figured that out. You can play it back on your Apple TV, though, no problem. And your iPhone and your iPad. And your and your Apple computer.
Right. And I think with Apple TV, what I've seen with iTunes is that you have more downloads for it. You're not restricted to just one or two or, you know, a certain number like it is with other carriers.
That I don't know about. You're saying of downloads of what?
Like when you want to download it again, say on iTunes or on an iPhone or iPad.
Yeah, that's
whatever.
Interesting. I didn't know that. You know, I buy, I don't buy anything anymore. I rent it. I stream it from, and typically I'll stream it from, I look at both, and they have very similar films. I look at both Amazon and iTunes, and I get on-demand or my on-demand from cable. And generally the prices are similar. If bandwidth becomes an issue, then your cable provider, you know, doesn't worry. You don't have to worry about bandwidth. On the other hand, it's only on your cable TV. It's not anywhere else. Again, iTunes is only on Apple devices. I like Amazon.
Right.
If you're an Amazon Prime member, it might be worth checking Amazon Prime because there are a lot of movies that are you pay for but that are free streaming on Prime. Just kind of
yeah,
like
I am a Prime member. The thing I'm just kind of disgusted with Amazon is that they charge, you know, per week, and you know it's like say $2, $3, you know, for HD movies, whatever, and then you end up paying, you know, like say for a season of a TV show, it's
right,
usually about $70 to $80 some dollars.
Is it that much on Amazon? Wow.
Yes, it is. I mean, you get into like $3 per episode, and then,
well, as long as you understand the limitations about where you can play it, I think it's perfectly appropriate to price shop.
Right. The Apple, you know, as I said, Apple TV and iTunes has where you have the season pass. They're usually priced anywhere. What I've found is shopping around for the same seasons is usually $25 to maybe $49, $50 before tax. And
the other thing, though, I sometimes get bit on. I'm rewatching Arrested Development because I want to catch up so I can watch it on Netflix. It's free on Netflix if you have a Netflix account, but you would be paying for it if you wanted to watch it on iTunes. So that's the other thing you have to. This is not a good. You know, we're in a kind of a middle period where people are, networks and content creators are trying to move to the internet, but they haven't quite figured out how to do it. And what we desperately need, and there are a few ways to do this, is a cross-platform search. There is a app called Fanhattan that does something like this, and it's kind of interesting because this was a stealth startup. They made an app first, but it turns out Fanhattan's real business is going to be a hardware device that it looks like it's called Fan TV. It looks like they want to do, well, kind of what we'd all be looking for, which is something that kind of goes across all stuff, you know. And you could say, hey, well, I want to watch Arrested Development. Google TV sort of did this, and you'd say, well, you could get it for $39 a season on iTunes, $69 a season on Amazon, or free on Netflix, and you can make the choice. That's what we need. I don't know if Fan TV will do this. It won't be out till later this year, and they have to make deals with cable companies. That always makes me nervous. Hamilton's in the chat room has given us a website that's kind of interesting. Can I stream it? Canistream.it. And that will let you search for streaming shows. So it's a web search tool, but only for streaming, not for purchase. We're in an interesting time where we, you know, are kind of in between, betwixt and between, and it's a little bit imperfect, especially if you want to be a cord cutter. You know, somebody who says, I don't pay for cable. I just watch TV's shows on the internet. Game of Thrones, for instance, you have to have an HBO subscription through a cable company to watch that. Now, a lot of people want to see it. In a year, they'll make it available. HBO is funny that way. They'll make it available for purchase in a year. Now, I think that's dumb. It probably has something to do with the deals they made out with the cable channels. But I think that's dumb because what do people do? Well, they steal it. See, this is the kind of the dirty little secret of the whole thing is if you're willing to be a thief, you can get anything free and often in better quality and ad-free on the internet if you know where to look, which I'm not going to tell you. So there. But what happens is when companies like HBO make it difficult to get, you know, the way you want it, force you to have a cable subscription and a HBO subscription, which is quite costly, then people start looking for other means. So it's important to remember the competition here is not the other movie companies, the other TV companies, is not Amazon, is not iTunes, is not Comcast or the internet. The competition is pirates. And that's really what changed the music industry. They realized, you know, we can get some money. we can sell it online and get some money. Metallica held out for a long time, right? Rolling Stones held out for a long time. There's a famous story of Steve Jobs going hat in hand to Mick Jagger, saying, please, Mick, let us put Rolling Stones music on iTunes. Please. No, not going to do it. The pirates will steal us. They'll rob us blind. Well, guess what, Mick? They were doing it already. What? So finally, I think the Rolling Stones and even Metallica realized, gee, if we don't make it easy for people to buy this stuff online, they're just going to steal it. And I think that all the content companies have to realize, not merely that they're going to steal it, but you have to make it easy to buy, easy to watch in the way we want, and easy to find. There's got to be solutions that make it so that we can say, hey, by the way, this is good for us. They don't want this either because... Why do you think Amazon could charge more than iTunes? Because they presume that you're not looking at both. As soon as it's easy to find out how much everybody's charging, then you're going to go with the cheapest, right? And then Amazon's going to have to drop the price and say, well, you know, it's called competition. It's called competition, and it's good for us. Canistream.com is for Netflix, Amazon, YouTube, Crackle, iTunes, cable TV, Blu-ray, and DVD. That's pretty awesome. It's not .com, it's .it. Canistream.it. We'll put that in the show notes at Tech Guy Labs. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I just got a legal bill. Oh, Jiminy Christmas. I got billed for a quarter of an hour. $25. Actually, that's not too bad. That's a good deal. But it makes me wonder why more people don't use LegalZoom.com. It's not a law firm, but it is a very affordable way to do a lot of the legal work that you might want to do or need to do at home or in business. I used LegalZoom to create our LLC here at TWIT because it was just a one-man shop. I couldn't afford a lawyer charging me $25 for a quarter hour of conversation. Actually, that's cheap. I can't believe it. Maybe that was 2 minutes. Yeah, I think it was less. LegalZoom. Here's the deal. It's flat fee, and you could do a lot of things. LLCs or corporations, S&C Corps. You can get this, $99. $99. You can incorporate for $99. You should, by the way, if you're starting a business, you really should, just to protect yourself so they can't take your house, things like that, if the business flops. Trademarks. You don't have to trademark your, you got a handle that you use, maybe a blog name. Don't let somebody steal your blog name. Register your trademark. How about kids? You got kids or assets? You really should have a last will and testament. $69. So the way it works, LegalZoom is that you go on there, you pay, you know, for a will or whatever, and then you go through a checklist and they generate the document for you. Now, sometimes people say, well, what if I have questions. They've added this since I use them, and this is great. This is the LegalZoom legal plan. They have vetted lawyers in almost every state who will answer your calls for a flat rate. You can look at unedited customer reviews, online profiles to choose the attorney who's right for you and your business. So you're really never at a loss. This is a great solution. Not for everything, I understand, but there are many things you can do with LegalZoom that you just don't need an attorney for. And if you want a little advice, you can get that too without that big legal firm cost. Start your business. Protect your family today. LegalZoom.com. It's not a law firm. It's self-help services at your specific direction, or speak to a legal plan attorney and get your questions answered and get ongoing advice. We've got a special thank you because we want you to mention that you heard this on the Tech Guy show. If you use the offer code TechGuy on checkout, we'll rebate you $10. How about that? I know it's not a mint. It's not even a quarter hour of my attorney's time. But hey, it's just as a way of saying thank you for using the offer code TechGuy. LegalZoom.com. I think you'll like it. It's been very, very good to me. Very, very good to me. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. The Transportation Safety Association, or the Traffic Bureau, whatever they call it, has said that it would be illegal for a company to manufacture self-driving vehicles, so-called autonomous vehicles. But they do say the state should legalize experiments and tests. I think we are not far off from self-driving cars. I really do. You see a lot of them. I don't see a lot. You do in the Silicon Valley. You see them driving around, these Google cars. There's a fleet of several hundred. They've done hundreds of thousands of miles in California without an accident. California made it legal to test self-driving cars, and that's what the NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, said. Autonomous vehicles should only be used for testing purposes until more safety features are added to these cars. You know, that at least they acknowledge they exist. The truth is, the biggest safety feature is to take the driver out of the equation. For a long time, we thought that cars, self-driving cars, would require a modification of the highway. You know, you'd have to put like a, you'd have to dig up the highway and put like a special electronic sensor rail. No. These cars, these Google cars driving on normal highways, they're using LiDAR on the roof to do an image of everything around them. And the car's computer is faster than a human and certainly knows exactly where it is in space, what's going on. And the only accident on a self-driving car, a Google self-driving car, was when the human took over. The human freaked out because, you know, they have a driver sitting there. His hands, you know, it's poised above the wheel, freaking out. Can you imagine how scary that would be to have the car be driving down the highway at 60 miles an hour? But apparently the human freaked out at some point, grabbed and caused an accident. But the cars are very safe, much safer than human drivers. There is a conspiracy theory. The conspiracy theory is that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is putting off autonomous vehicles because they would eliminate revenue from speeding tickets. Many cities, and I think this town that I'm in is highly dependent on revenue from moving violations, would lose a lot of money if they couldn't write speeding tickets. And guess what? No more tickets with autonomous vehicles. Now the administrator of the NHTSA C3429 said that autonomous vehicles are a long way off from hitting the roads beyond testing. I don't think so. You could buy a car now that these adaptive cruise controls, have you seen these? That will match the speed of the car in front of you. If the car stops in front of you, it'll stop in plenty of time. Not jam the brakes on like you might do because you're texting. It sees the car slow down, it slows down. It sees a car stop, it stops. Think of the lives that would be saved. There's more than 50,000 deaths a year caused in auto crashes. 3,000 of them from distracted driving, from texting. A year. So forget the... I don't think the NHTSA is worried about traffic ticket revenue. I just don't. It will be interesting. It will be interesting to see. I think the biggest problem, frankly, is us. It's terrifying. The idea of getting in a car and saying, okay, I'm going to read a book. You take me home. It's scary. That's the biggest problem. But, you know, you fly in autonomous planes all the time. We've come a long way with autopilot. Frequently when you're flying these days, the plane lands itself. The pilot's just sitting there. I don't think they're reading books, but they might be listening to this podcast. The plane lands themselves. If a plane can land itself, I think a car could drive down the freeway. So many states are now legalizing autonomous vehicles only for testing. Only for testing. But I think next 20 years we'll probably see them. Your lifetime. You may not have to. How old are you? 10 years old. So in 6 years you'll be getting a driver's license. Good luck, Mom and Dad. That's a fun time. With any luck, in 10 years you won't get a driver's license. You'll get an autonomous vehicle license. You could just hop in. Imagine the kids get driven to school. The car just takes the kids to school. Chevy demonstrated that a couple of years ago at CES. They were urban vehicles because a real problem in cities these days is vehicles, right? You just would love to not have vehicles in the city. That's why it's so fun going to Venice. There's just boats. There's no cars. So General Motors was testing. They look like little pods, and they only seat two, but you can daisy chain them. So Mom and Dad can get in the back pod, the kids get in the front pod, and then you just say, hey, let's go to Farrell's and have an ice cream cone. Or take the kids to school. The other thing is that would make a big difference with these autonomous vehicles is it would eliminate the need for ownership. You know, one of the big detriments to the environment with automobiles is each and every one of us has to have this big 2-ton vehicle that we use once in a while. You know, it's idle most of the time. Proponents of autonomous vehicles say, look, you don't have to own a car anymore. You just get a car when you need it. You take out your smartphone and say, have a car ready for me in 3 minutes. I want to go downtown. Car shows up, you get in it, takes you downtown, you get out, the car goes away. You don't have to own it. You pay for it as used. It's like a very, very efficient cab service. And here's the beauty part. All right, we're going to go on a family vacation. So take us to the Grand Tetons and then have the autonomous RV meet us there. You get out of the car, you get in the RV, drive around, you get out of the RV, you go home in the other car. You don't own either. Much less impact on the environment because these cars are not idle very often. And the costs are less for everybody all around. And it's safer. New York City just implemented this city bike share, which is a great. They have it in Paris, where they're just a rack of bikes outside all the buildings. You put in your card, you take the bike, you bike to where you want, you put it in the rack there, and you're done. It's like Zipcars. Avis just bought Zipcars because Avis, I think, realizes this is the future of cars and car rental. It's not ownership, but cars on demand, and autonomy makes it even better because they just come to you. Well, anyway, that's my prediction. You take that tape and you put it in a vault, and in 10 years, you tell me. 88, how wrong I was. 80, you know, it's so hard to predict with technology. You know, and sometimes I've got it right, and sometimes very wrong. In 1994, I had a Newton. And I said, someday, this handwriting device will be small enough to carry in your pocket. It'll have always on internet connection. You'll be able to do anything you want with, you know, and I was right. I also said, by the year 2000, hard drives will be gone because we won't need them anymore. We'll be using solid-state memory. I was wrong on that by about 20 years. You know, it evens out. We'll see what happens. George in Santa Monica, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, George.
Hi, Leo. I have a manual iPad, not an automatic.
What's a manual iPad?
Well, you're talking about all these cars and everything's automatic. So, but I'm having a problem. I tried to watch your show yesterday, and on my iPad, I come to your site, and it says we are optimizing your stream for the device, and it's on Ustream.
Yeah. So here's the issue. You know, the iPad doesn't support Flash, right?
Right.
So most of the ways you can watch this show are Flash-based. Ustream, Justin TV, BitGravity. If you go to our website or if you go to live.twit.tv, you can watch this show and all the other shows we do on the network, but via Flash. Because we know a lot of people use iPads, we have a special thing that detects an iPad and gives you a non-Flash stream. I guess that was broken yesterday. Try today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right. Which famous computer operating system was this the theme song? For which famous computer operating system was this the theme song? Start me up. Windows 95, John Slonina, you win the prize because it was the debut of the start menu. Start me up, get it? Debut of the Windows 95. That's how long we've had the start menu. And then along comes Windows 8. No start menu. Instead, you get a start screen. And a lot of people are unhappy about it. Although Microsoft apparently is bringing in something back. They call it the start button. It's not a start menu. But it has some start menu-like features you can turn on. And boot to desktop will also be Windows 8.1, which should come out this fall. Microsoft, I think, acknowledged. Whoops. Maybe went a little too far. Number of airline pilots in the chat room explaining to me that, of course, only certain planes can land themselves. And we don't do it a lot, they say. Only, if we have to, or every 90 days for testing. Okay, fine. Apologies. They don't do it all the time, just once in a while, every 3 months at least. But they can is the point. And they could do a good job. Now, if I were an airline pilot, I might want to kind of emphasize that, we don't do this all the time. I don't blame them for a number of reasons. The point is they can. They can. We were talking about, and this is a little inside baseball, so I'm not going to belabor it, but our last caller is having trouble watching the stream of our podcasts. Yeah, we are. I checked it. Something is going wrong with one of our providers. So if you go to live.twit.tv, it'll just say, we're working on it, preparing the stream, preparing, and nothing will ever happen. But you notice the third link there at live.twit.tv is get the Twit app. There is an app you can run on your iPad and iPhone that works better. That uses a streaming. I shouldn't promote it because that one we have to pay for. It uses a streaming service that we pay for. Because this is the problem. And it's a problem for a lot of companies. There's no Flash on iPhones and iPads. And even on most Android devices now, Flash is just kind of disappearing. As it should. I have no problem with that. But all the video streaming companies that we use still use Flash. YouTube's moving away from it, and I suspect everybody will eventually. So we have to do... There's a company called Ustream that we use that has a non-Flash video technology. That's what you see at live.twit.tv. Ustream's been having a little problem lately with that server, apparently. And then we pay for another company called Flowsoft, and that's the stuff you'll see in the apps, I think. And on Roku, because Roku doesn't do Flash either. Flash is best on the desktop, and frankly, because of the security issues these days, I don't even recommend it on the desktop. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number if you've got a question. Trish is in Chino Hills, California, our next caller. Hi, Trish.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I need your help. I'm desperate here.
Okay.
I have a Dell Inspiron 620 desktop. It's only about 9 months old.
Oh, dear.
And it's running Windows 7. And per your instructions, I run Nod 32.
Thank you.
And I have Firefox on there.
Okay.
And I do use a wired keyboard.
Okay.
About a week ago, I started getting some kind of, I don't know what it is. My computer is typing out numbers and letters randomly. It opens up Firefox by itself, even though I just am looking at the screen and it's doing its own thing.
So this isn't when you're using the keyboard. It's just all by itself.
I can be sitting here in front of the desktop at the monitor, and it's typing.
Okay, and you're not touching the keyboard.
No, not at all.
So the keyboard probably has a short. I'm hoping it's the keyboard. Do you have another keyboard you can try?
Yeah, I can use. I could try the wireless that I originally had.
Yeah, just try a different keyboard. The wireless shouldn't have this problem. So there's a couple of things that could have gone wrong. The keyboard itself could be shorted out. The keyboard, this would be more scary, if you had a problem with the port, the keyboard port or the USB port that it's plugged into. That would be a bigger problem because that's probably only fixable by taking in the motherboard. But I bet you it's just the keyboard. I think it's just the keyboard. So try your wireless keyboard. See how that does. If this all still happens with your wireless keyboard, then something else is going on.
Yeah, because I did run a scan on the computer to see if there was anything suspicious going on. And it came back that there wasn't anything there.
I just had a thought. Where is the wireless keyboard right now? Is it in a drawer?
My daughter uses it as a toy downstairs.
Yeah, it's still paired to the wireless keyboard. And every time your daughter is banging on the wireless keyboard, it's doing
Are
it
you
on
serious?
Your computer. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
So, okay. It's your daughter. Your daughter's typing
online, and you look at and first thing you see is it could be a rat, a remote access Trojan. I went, my God! All the banking and
no, it's not a rat.
Okay,
it's your daughter. Take the keyboard away from her.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Leo. I really appreciate.
Whew, that was a,
I love your show. I listen to it every week.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Trish. Yeah, there's been a lot of attention paid to these rats all of a sudden. There was a big article about rats in the New York Times somewhere? And now everybody's terrified. Bad guys are in my computer and they're watching me. And the article was really kind of terrifying because it said that there's a whole subculture of ratters who turn on cameras remotely and watch you, and they collect pictures of people they're watching, and then they post them on the internet. Remote administration software. It was an Ars Technica. Meet the men who spy on women through their webcams. Oh, well, you know, if I read that, I would be a little afraid. I don't blame you, Trish. And, they talk about how they'll trade these pictures and the ratters call the women female slaves. They don't know they have been enslaved because. So this is theoretically possible. But if you're running a good antivirus and you're not installing software from strangers, it's not, I don't think it's as widespread as they would like you to believe. It happens. Certainly, it's not that it doesn't happen. But I wouldn't be too paranoid about this. Now, I do know a number of paranoid people, including our security expert, Steve Gibson, who place tape over their cameras on their computers. They all have them now, don't they? Until they want to use them for Skype or something. They put masking tape over them. And I guess you could do that. I think I'd rather find out if there's anything on your computer. If you scanned it, if he said scan it and said there's nothing there, there's nothing there. And you know, this thing with the wired and the wireless, you know, you take a wire. I've had it happen to me. I took a Bluetooth keyboard, said, I'm not going to use it anymore. I use a wired keyboard, put it in the drawer. And all of a sudden, strange keystrokes. And then I realized, oh, yeah, there's something sitting on the keyboard in the drawer and it's still paired to my computer. That's the most likely scenario, much more than a rat. Henry, Santa Rosa, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Henry.
Hello. I just got through getting an iPad, and I decided I want to do some programming on it. So I'm not too sure how it's done, because I've had experience programming a PC before.
Oh, good. Well, iPads, you don't program on the iPad. You do it on the computer. And then you test the code in an emulator on the computer. If it works well, then you move it over to an iPad to test it. So that's how we have to program mobile devices these days. You don't do the programming on the iPad. Do you have a? And it's, by the way, it's a lot easier on a Mac.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Well, I have a
guess
Windows
why?
15.
Why do you think it's easier on a Mac? Who makes the iPad? there are cross-platform ways to develop. Real Mac, R-E-A-L-M-A-C, makes one of them. There's a variety of cross-platform programming environments that are easier to use that are designed to let you write software for the iPad. Real Mac is a good one. There's a variety of other ones. They're not as good as writing natively, but at least you can do it. And you have what's your programming experience with?
Basic, C.
Oh, okay. The Mac stuff is written in Objective-C generally, but there are other ways to do that. There are and there are a number of programs that you can use to write on a Windows machine. If you got serious about writing iPad or iPhone apps for iOS, I think you'd probably want to get a Mac Mini or something, and have that as a second computer on your PC, on your keyboard and mouse. PhoneGap, WorkLite, these are others that do the same thing. The idea is you can write software and on one platform and run it on another. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Xcode's the best. You know what I don't love doing? I don't love going to the post office to spend money. That's why I use Stamps.com. How about that for a segue, huh? Stamps.com means you don't have to go to the post office. You don't need a postage meter. I'm not talking about getting a postage meter. Those are expensive, and the ink and all that stuff. And a lot of times you still have to go to the post office to charge it up. I see people waiting in line at the post office with a postage meter in hand. Not Stamps.com. You use your computer, your printer to print U.S. postage whenever you need it, 24/7. It's truly postage on demand. I love it. If you do a lot of mailing in your business, you're going to love it too. We use Stamps.com. Actually, we have two accounts. It's so popular here. We have to fight over the USB scale, so we got another one. With Stamps.com, you just print the postage you need. You could print it on a blank stamp forms, but more often you're going to print it right on the envelope. And Stamps.com will let you print your logo along with the postage and a return address. And by the way, it'll even pull the sending addresses from your address book from QuickBooks. If you're an eBay seller, an Amazon, or an Etsy seller, it'll pull it from the websites automatically. It'll fill out forms to you. It really simplifies everything. It's not just postage on demand. I mean, it's pro mailing. It is, and you get discounts you don't get at the post office, by the way. On express mail, on priority mail. If you have a confirmation number, a tracking number, as you would with priority and express, it'll email that to the recipient. It's very pro. I bet you if you get stuff from an Amazon or an Etsy seller and you just look, you'll see it's a Stamps.com stamp on there. For the past several years, we've been using Stamps.com. It's saved us, and it makes us look more professional. You don't handwrite addresses on letters or packages. You get barcoded postage, a return and delivery address all in one step right on the envelope. So it's super pro. Great for shipping labels, a company logo right on the label. Here's the deal. If you go to Stamps.com now, you can try it free. There's a $80 bonus offer on the front there, but I've got a better deal. Just for listeners, you'll only know this if you listen. Click the radio microphone in the upper right-hand corner and enter our offer code TECHGUY. Two words, T-E-C-H-G-U-Y. And that $80 value turns into $110 bonus value. We will up the amount of postage, $55 in free postage over the first few months of your account, plus the USB scale, plus a $5 supply kit, and of course a four-week trial of Stamps.com. Stamps.com, before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the page and type in Tech Guy, two words, for your no-risk trial offer. And you get to keep the scale, by the way, no matter what. Stamps.com! Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders and home theater and GPS devices and MP3 players and anything that's on your mind. Yeah, we know, not much GPS or MP3 players anymore. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free, from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., you can just, you know, use Skype and call us or some other voice over the internet program. We also have a website, very nice one, techguylabs.com, where all the questions and answers get, you know, as we're doing the show, James DeRuvo's writing that all down quickly, you know, kind of transcribing it. And then after the fact, we come back, we put audio up and video up of each question and answer pair with a summary and text. And I hope if you've got a thought about it or a correction or something to add, if you're an airline pilot and you want to correct me on how often planes land themselves, just go to the website and add that in the comments. And that, you know, the website's free. It's open to all. It will always be free. You have my word. So you're adding to the overall value of it. And I appreciate you doing that. TechGuyLabs.com. While you're there, you can also get a link to our chat room. It's always fun to be in there. Phone numbers on there, too. And like I said, everything you want at TechGuyLabs.com. Our call screener, H-Bomb, Heather Hammond, is there. She's there. She's gathering the calls. She's preparing them. Actually, somebody asked in the chat room, are the lines full? Yeah, the lines are full. They're pretty much always full, aren't they?
They're never not full, right?
Yeah, never not full. we could have more than six lines, but we only have six lines. And the reason is if you're number six in the in the list, you're going to be an hour on hold. So we don't want anybody on hold for more than an hour, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'd rather just
because Leo doesn't move that fast. So who should I talk to here? I see some great calls.
Yeah. Let's talk to Neil in Phoenix.
Let's do it. Hi, Neil. Thank you, Heather. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call. We love your show.
Thank you.
Sorry. Have to say, spent a lot on advertisers for you. I brought a lot of great products. It'd be expensive show to watch, I have to tell you.
You know, one of the reasons I can say that the website will always be free, the show will always be free, is because we do have good advertisers. I believe in free ad-supported free media. I just happen to like that. And so thank you for supporting them. I appreciate it.
Right.
They support us.
Which brings us to my question. One of the advertisers that I support is Hover. And I've taken your advice here. I'm trying to set up. You once said something about buying your own domain and setting up your own email address so
yes.
that you're giving only one email address for life, essentially.
And highly recommend this. Highly. So the idea is, you know, a lot of people create a Gmail or a Yahoo or a Hotmail account, and they use it for a while, and then for whatever reason, they want to go somewhere else. You know, I mean, who knows how long Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft will be around. So you might. So the better thing to do is, and it's what I've done for years, is to have a custom domain that then forwards to an email provider.
Okay. So and I've done that. I've got the domain.
Yeah.
But I'm not clear. I have Outlook. So I've got I've got four email addresses, the custom domain, and I've got Gmail and
right.
And
so what you do on Hover, Hover doesn't do email hosting. Some companies do. Hover doesn't. So actually, maybe they do. I take it back. Maybe they do hosting, but they'll also do forwarding. So the cheapest is forward only. And then that way, what happens is email comes into Hover, and it just boing, goes over to your Gmail or somewhere else. Or you can have them do hosting. I wouldn't have them do the hosting. I would just say, it's free to get Gmail or Yahoo Mail. I would just say forward it to whichever you're using, right? So you want to use Gmail as your gathering address. Just you have to go in the Hover domain management settings and say send my email to Gmail, and you'll give it your Gmail address. That'll be $5 a year to do that, and it's free.
Okay.
Of course.
And then what do you do then with your now? When I send an email out, remember,
nothing changes from your point of view. So Outlook will continue to gather the email, not from Hover, because Hover's not hosting it, but from where you pointed the Hover address. So I have Leo at leoville.com. And that, when email goes to that address, Hover then, boing, sends it over to Gmail, which is a different account. And I set up my Outlook to get it from Gmail. There's one additional little feature.
Email out, but won't it go out from Gmail as well?
It does. It has to, because Gmail is the outbound server as well. But you tell Outlook to use your custom address as the return address. And you might even tell Gmail to do that as well. Gmail has what they call delegation, mail delegation, where it will say, It used to say on behalf of, which was very annoying, on behalf of Leo at Leoville, but now it took the on behalf of out. So you can go into the Gmail settings and say, when I send out an email, it should say it's coming from Leo at Leoville.com and tell Outlook the same thing. It's coming from Leo at Leoville.com. Then people won't see the Gmail address ever. And you don't want them to because you don't want to get them in the habit of sending mail to the Gmail account in case you want to move. You want it to be sending it to the Neil at Neilville.com. Right?
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, actually, one quick offhand question real quick here to throw out for you.
Certainly.
Okay. I'm looking for a new TV. I have a existing HD TV. It's getting kind of dated. It doesn't have an optical port. It's getting kind of green sometimes when I start it up.
So I think that's not a good sign, yeah.
Well, it'll turn green, and I'll pull the plug, let it reboot, if you will, then restart it. It works fine for a while. So I'm wondering about getting a Vizio, like a 42-inch TV. I wonder what you thought of those.
Vizios are great. They're kind of a second-tier company. So the primary big-tier companies are Panasonic, Sony, LG, Sharp. But the second-tier company, some of them are very good, and Vizio is one of them. I think they're very, very good. They sell them mostly in big-box stores. They're much more affordable, and I think in many cases they're just as good.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yeah. I like plasma. It's getting harder and harder to find plasma TVs because in the store, LCDs look better. They're brighter. Sometimes they call them LEDs, the same thing. It's the LED is the backlight on an LCD TV. So in stores, LCD TVs, whether they're LED backlit or not, look better because they're brighter and stores are bright. But when you get them home and you darken the room, plasmas are more accurate. They do use more power. There's some negatives to plasma. You can get bigger screens in the LCD sphere now than you can in plasma and so forth. But I happen to like plasmas. And unfortunately, your choices are getting narrower and narrower. A lot of Samsung still makes them. A few companies do. My favorite is and it's the one I own and really like, is the Panasonic Vieiras. And I have a VT60, but they have ST, VT, and GT. Very good. And, slightly higher price points for the slightly better models. In the LCDs, there's a lot of good choices. Samsung's very good. Actually, they're all good. Sharp's good. LG's good. And I think Vizio's very good. I think Vizio's quite good. So nothing wrong with it. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number. Dominic is in Vancouver, our next caller. Hi, Dominic. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you going? How's it going today?
Going well. How are you?
Pretty good. Well, I run a small tech website in which I cover Apple and Android news.
Great.
I only have Apple products, so I'm looking for a low-cost, high-power Android tablet like the Nexus 7. But I sense that the Nexus 7 will be updated soon with improvements to the software.
Yeah, we thought it would be, in fact, at Google I.O. last month, and Google surprised everybody by not updating the 7. It will be updated soon. It may be that they're waiting for 4.3 of Android. The current version of Android is 4.2.2, Jelly Bean. 4.3 apparently will be just a newer version of Jelly Bean. There's been rumors about Key Lime Pie. That's supposedly the next version of Android, but no sightings. So it may be, and I wouldn't be surprised if Google's waiting. You don't need to wait because one of the advantages of buying a Nexus device is that Google always updates them and updates them promptly. So even if you buy a current Nexus 7, you can pretty much be guaranteed it'll be updated when the new one comes out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Richard's in L.A., our next caller. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk with you again. I have a friend who has a Razer phone. She has been sent a text message with a movie on it, a very brief one, about 30 seconds maybe. Can that be saved on a computer somehow?
Maybe. When you say a Razer, do you mean the new Razer or the old Razer? Is it an Android-based Razer?
I think it is. She just bought it about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, okay. So it's Android. Okay. Yeah, get a... if it's a Droid Razer, you're okay. They actually made Razer, and I was surprised they brought the name back. They made Razer as a feature phone. And so that's the potential for confusion. But if it's an Android Razer, yeah, get a program. It's in the Play Store called AirDroid.
Right.
And you put AirDroid on your computer and you put AirDroid on your phone, follow its instructions, and it will let you access the memory of the phone easily via Wi-Fi. Now, okay. If you want, you can always cable the phone to the computer, but I think AirDroid is actually a very handy little program.
Yeah, I remember getting AirDroid a couple of years ago because it looked like it was essential for certain things.
Yeah, you don't have, you can, as I said, most phones you can do it via cable. I just find it, you know, if you've got Wi-Fi. Now, you have to have Wi-Fi for this to make any sense.
No, she does. That's
yeah. And I use it all the time to get stuff into and out of the phone. The Android phones have a pretty much visible file structure.
Right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Anytime. Andy in Tacoma, Washington. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
Doing well. I talked to you a while ago, and I'm the at that time was the one guy in your caller base that loved his Windows phone, and I still do.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, Verizon sent me the 928, the Lumia 928, and I have to say, very impressive phone. I think they've done a very nice job.
Yeah, that's the next one on my list when I upgrade.
Which one do you have?
Samsung Focus S.
Yeah, I have Focus. I actually have. I had a Focus S. Yeah, that was my first Windows phone. Those were Windows 7 phones. I think the new Windows 8 phones are even better. Have you upgraded it to 7.5?
Yes.
Yeah. So that gives you a lot of the functionality of a Windows 8 phone. You know, the only reason I don't tell more people to get Windows 8 phones, and I do, I think these are great phones. They're very, very nice. Is that, you know, there are just a few apps. Like my son has to use an iPhone because he uses Vine. There is no Vine on Android or Windows phone, so he's got to use an iPhone. And there are apps like that that are just not available, although increasingly everything you'd want is now on Windows phone. So I think if you can, if there's no app that you have to have, Windows phones are fabulous. And the cameras on the Lumias are great.
Oh, that's what I hear, yeah.
Yeah.
So but I had a question for you.
Yeah.
And I know I could probably find it out if I read the fine print, but most of the time when I install software, the only print I read is I accept. So,
me, I'm with you on that. I do the same thing. We're bad. Yeah, yeah.
But when it comes to cloud usage, is my information can still owned by me when it goes to cloud?
Always.
Is it owned by the cloud?
Nobody, no. And this is a constant source of confusion. And from time to time, you'll see blogs who are anxious to get clicks saying, read this, you know, the terms of service. You're giving up all rights to your content. Nobody wants rights to your content. Nobody. But remember that in order for you to have stuff on a cloud service, they have to be able to reproduce it. They have to be able to copy it from server to server to arbitrary servers. It's usually on multiple servers. They have to be able to put it on one device and then another device. And so for that, they kind of assert certain rights to your data, but it's rights that they need in order to do what you want it to do. Nobody, Google, Microsoft, Apple, Instagram, Facebook, nobody wants to say, hey, nobody would use them. Hey, we own that picture now. Nobody would use them. Instagram got in a little bit of trouble because they actually didn't do anything wrong, but they changed their terms of service. And people felt that it implied that Instagram would be able to use pictures that you post on Instagram in ads. And freaked out. And Instagram immediately backed off. But Nilay Patel, who's an attorney and writes for The Verge, wrote a very interesting article in which he said, you know, that was a mistake. Instagram's new terms of service were better for the consumer because they were explicit. The old terms of service were so vague that Instagram could do almost anything. And this is the problem. We're not attorneys. And when we read legal documents, we often misinterpret them. So I don't read them because I'm not an attorney, but I trust people like Nilay who's trained, Denise Howell, who does a great show this week in law on our network, another attorney, intellectual property attorney. These guys are very clear. No, nobody is. If they did that, no one would use them. If Facebook said, hey, post pictures on Facebook and we own them, you would never use them again.
That's true.
So it's just it's hard to read the wording and understand it, and it's often easy to get scared by it. Don't be scared by it. It's fine to use cloud services. Now, you should understand that in the process of copying something to a cloud service, you're using a public internet. The cloud service itself, depending on the company, may or may not be well secured. There's always the risk that anything you post on a cloud service could be inadvertently exposed. Recently, just this week, I was very disheartened because a court ruled that Google had to hand over information that it had, I think it was from Gmail, to the FBI, even though there was no warrant. And this is very disturbing because this is something called a national security letter. This is something that started with the Patriot Act. We live in dangerous times, and the U.S. government has asserted, in my opinion, rights that far exceed its constitutional rights. But the judges are supporting it at this point to go to, and it's for, you know, you're giving up privacy for security, basically. But it's very disturbing. Google fought it. The FBI said, give us this information. Google said, no, you don't have a warrant. Get a warrant. They went. The FBI went to the judge and said, Judge, Your Honor, we don't need a warrant. And the judge agreed.
Wow.
So the one thing I would caution, I mean, look, I don't know if you fear the government or not, but that's that would be more of the threat, not that Google is doing anything with your stuff. It's more that the government's doing your stuff, something with your stuff.
All right.
Hey, thanks for the call. I'm sad to have to bring up that story, but I guess I should mention this. These national security letters are really interesting documents. They have one very interesting term. If you receive one, if Google receives a national security letter, not only do they have to agree to hand over the data, and by the way, a national security letter is not a warrant. It's warrantless electronic data gathering. You're not allowed to say you got an NSL. You cannot reveal that you received this. So you can't tell the person whose information is being revealed that their information has been revealed. You can't go to the press and say, hey, I'm getting these national security letters. You can't say anything. So I'm very disheartened by this. I understand we live in dangerous times. The federal government has decided to be very aggressive. You would think these national security letters would be used not often. In 2003 to 2006, the FBI issued 192,000 of them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt is here, the photo guy. He's back from Ireland, where he spent it. You had a little birthday trip to Ireland. I guess, were you doing a workshop too?
No, it was just a vacation, just 2.5 weeks of traveling Ireland. It was wonderful. I love this country.
When a professional photographer goes on vacation, what does he do? Takes lots of pictures.
actually, I did.
What camera did you bring with you?
Handful online. I brought my large format 4x5 camera and my 5D Mark II. Just the good old 5D Mark II. It's still working really nicely.
I have to say, when I look at this picture of the Inishmore Cliffs, I have to think it was large format. There's so much detail and clarity in it. It's just gorgeous.
This is not large format, though. This was actually digital. But still tons of tons of detail just in the landscape. I mean, look at those cliffs.
Oh,
look at those.
Goodness.
It's amazing. It's amazing. The people, the landscape. We even brought the sun with us. I mean, we pretty much every day we had sunshine, while in Germany there was snow. So it was really, it wasn't fair to the ones we left at home. But we brought the sun back because now the sun is shining here.
Where did you go in Ireland?
Oh, we arrived in Dublin. We took a round trip from the north of Dublin over to Westport and then down the west coast till the most southern west point of Ireland, and then over to Cork, and then up to the Wicklow Mountains, and then back to Dublin and home. So
for people who like to take pictures, traveling is just such a great opportunity to
get
out there, and you know, it's, and even as a busman's holiday, even if you're a photographer, it's still great.
Yeah, but this, in a long time, this was the first one that I didn't combine with a workshop, so it was just my fiance and myself traveling and taking pictures.
So Chris is our photo guy, chrismarquardt.com. You'll find a link in our show notes at techguylabs.com. Joins us every week. Are we going to review our pictures yet?
Yes.
We are.
We want to review an assignment. There's one open, the bubble assignment, and that has been going for about a month. So it's time to look at that. And
so
I sent you an email with
some of
the pictures.
The way this works is we give you a word or two and ask you to illustrate that word or concept in a photo and upload it to our Flickr group. It's the tech guy group at flickr.com. free to do so. And it's you know, it's really just an excuse to get out there and take pictures. But every month or so, Chris will pick three images from the submitted pictures and talk about them. So give me three. Let's start. What's the first picture we want to talk about?
Let's start with the first picture by Pixel Pusher, and it's called Starry Night. And this is a picture that is kind of weird. I mean, it's a starry night. You see the sky in the back, but then there's a cup and some gel pills and something. And the photographer used a visual effect that is used by done by using several, like, two polarizing filters. If you have done photography, you've probably heard of a polarizer. And if you use two of those, one behind the subject and one in front of the camera, you can get very weird things happening. So
it
just
looks
like
the rainbow you get with an oil slick on water, sort of.
I think the effect is probably similar. It is probably a similar visual effect that's happening there.
Diffraction thing, yeah.
A diffraction grating or something, yeah. So I just thought this is a nice visual effect that you normally don't see. You don't see that with your eyes, but you can achieve that with two polarizing filters. So if you have these toys to play with, that's a good way to experiment.
We should
mention
that's
what photography is about.
That you don't recommend people put filters on their lenses. You know, a lot of times when you buy a new lens, they'll sell you a filter, and you don't just to so-called protect the lens. You don't recommend that.
I don't recommend protective filters, but a polarizer has a very specific purpose, and not just those visual effects, but you can get nice and nice saturated colors in landscape photography, for example. So a polarizer in landscape photography, certainly something that does make a lot of sense. So sometimes
that's funny.
Use
so you may get one, but just don't get it. You don't need it to protect your lens. Just get it to make funny pictures.
Yeah.
Or interesting.
Or more saturated
creative
colors.
Creative pictures. Yeah. Our next picture comes from, it's called Beneath Bubbles, and it comes from JC-ish.
Yeah, and it's JC-ish. He or she wrote "Bubbles in a Bottle of Glass Cleaner Seen from Below," and
this is amazing because it's abstract. You wouldn't know what it is.
Yep.
Unless she said so.
And the photographer just looked around with an open eye and probably saw this, but just getting the idea of picking up a glass cleaner bottle and looking at it from below. A lot of people wouldn't just do that. But if you do that or other unusual things, you sometimes find very interesting sights. And that is one where you see in the front very big bubbles and then the smaller bubbles behind. And they make these angular shapes. And probably the bottle makes that blue tint that you see. So it makes a very abstract picture with bubbles that, a lot of people would probably not have found.
Yeah, it's nice. I like it. It's quite beautiful. And I like the blue. I guess it's Windex.
And maybe. And blue fits the theme really well. I don't know. Blue bubbles.
Well, then we got another blue picture. My bubble has bubbles. This is from Pixel Pusher.
That is. I looked at that for a second. I was like, how did he do that? And then it dawned on me. It's probably a sheet of ice or something with bubbles frozen in it. That's what it looks like. And it reminds me of a picture that I took a while ago, or actually several years ago, a similar picture of bubbles frozen in ice. And then I looked at the blue color, and mine also has a blue color. And the way I got that, and I suspect that Pixel Pusher got it a similar way, is that just held it in front of something blue.
Huh.
So the ice picks up the color.
Right.
Back then, I had a friend with a blue jacket just stand behind the sheet of ice and hold it. And that added really interesting colors. We tried with a red background too, but that didn't really work with the ice. Ice needs blue, you know. It's cold, and blue is a cold color, so that goes together really well. So, kudos, good picture. I like this.
Yeah, I love it. We have a great bunch of people in our Flickr group. Flickr's free to join. In fact, the new Flickr gives you a terabyte of storage, which is pretty sweet. And I like the new look to Flickr. I like how it. The pictures are emphasized. And our tech guy group is free to join. There's 3,000 pictures in it. You'll know you're there when you see 3,000 pictures and something like 10,000 members. It's called Tech Guy. It's free to join. So what you do is, if you want to participate, is or even look at these pictures, because there's quite a few. We'll put them on the show notes. But you can also just go to Flickr.com, and then if you're a member, search for the Tech Guy group. Give us a new assignment, Chris.
The new assignment, I just returned from Ireland and I thought I'd make it really simple. The new assignment is green.
Green.
Just a color green or whatever you want to interpret there.
Green. Color doesn't have to be, though. Could just be green.
Doesn't have to be the color green, yeah.
Could be something else green. So here's, again, what you do. You go to Flickr, you tag the photo. You can do as many as one photo a week. You'll have about 4 weeks to do this, so you can get as many as four photos up there. Just to tag them and add them to the Tech Guy group. Chris Marquardt does a podcast called Tips from the Top Floor that is just a great podcast for people who are interested in digital photography. He also does workshops all over. You can find his workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com. And we'll have a link to all of these images and our Flickr group on our website, techguylabs.com. And happy birthday. I know you went out there for your birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome home.
And I'll be back next week to bust another photo myth.
Give us some photo myth busting. Thank you, Chris Marquardt. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We move on with another call. This is Laverne in Brooksville, Florida. Hey, Laverne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Laverne.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, welcome to the
Hi,
show.
Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Thank you. Well, I'm going to be buying a new desktop and laptop within the next 6 months.
Oh, do you want me to help you out? I love spending people's money. We'll do that next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am going to do a commercial right now. Commercial for a fine product that many of us here at the cottage, the brick house, use. Gazelle. Gazelle. I got some tweets yesterday. Somebody said, I'm getting ready. The new iPhone's coming. I want to get rid of my old one. Where do I go? Gazelle.com. That's where. GAZELLE.com. It's a place you go to sell not just your iPhone, your Samsung phone, even Blackberries, iPads. Tablets from a variety of manufacturers. They've actually extended the selection. Samsung, Nexus, Kindle Fires, even Microsoft Surface or Asus tablets. Did you buy a Surface RT? You're thinking maybe you'd like to trade that in? Let's see what that 64 gig RT is worth. This is the process. You have all the pieces? Yeah, I have the touch cover and all of that. $238. Now, here's the deal. When you get the quote, that's good for 30 days. That doesn't mean you have to send it to them right away. In fact, I'd wait. You know, maybe you want to get a new iPhone. Let's just see how much my AT&T 64 gig iPhone 5 is worth. $340. Okay. Now I got enough money between the two of those to buy a new iPhone. So here's the deal. Then, when you're ready to pull the trigger, you have 30 days to do it, you say, okay, Gazelle, send me the box and the mailing label. They pay postage on anything worth more than a buck. And instant turnaround, you'll get a check, a PayPal credit if you're really in a hurry. Or, this is my suggestion, if you buy anything on Amazon, get the Amazon gift card because they bump that by 5%. So an additional 5% just for using the Amazon gift card. Go to gazelle.com. Get a locked-in offer for 30 days right now for your Samsung, your iPhone, your HTC, your BlackBerry, smartphone, your iPad, your Mac. Lock it in. Prices are not going up on any of this stuff. These aren't what we call antique roadshow items. Old iPods. Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Payment is fast. Within a few days of the item being received, they will wipe the data for you. They often increase the value. They'll send you more than they quoted if they get the item and they say, oh, you know, this is better shape than you said. They've paid $100 million now to 500,000 customers. You could be one of them. Free shipping. Fast processing, cash in your pocket. You got to love it. Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Don't get stuck with those old gadgets, gathering dust in your closet or that special gadget drawer. Do you have a gadget drawer, an old gadget drawer? I have about 10 of them. Gazelle.com. Homemade, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. We lost our caller. She must have, maybe her battery died. But I remember she was asking about buying advice for a computer and a printer. I can give you some general buying advice. For one thing, Intel yesterday announced a new chipset, the Haswell. And this is the fourth generation core processors, Intel core processors, fourth generation. What is better in the new processor? Two things, better battery life and better graphics performance. So it really only matters, I think, on laptops. On a desktop, you can have a separate graphics card, even on some laptops. And battery life, of course, on a desktop is irrelevant. But if you're using a portable device, this is good news. Intel's claiming a 50% improvement in battery life. That's pretty good. You got a 4-hour laptop, it'll be a 6-hour laptop. 6-hour laptop will be 9 hours. Motherboard graphics will be better, too. Means you don't have to buy an expensive laptop with an NVIDIA chipset. You could just use the built-in Intel chipset. So laptop-wise, I would wait until they get into the market. And you're looking for, it probably won't say Haswell. If anything, it'll say fourth generation. The problem is this is such techie stuff that most stores don't even bother to advertise it. So somewhere in the fine print, it'll say fourth generation Intel processor. That's what you're looking for, certainly on a laptop. On a desktop, it doesn't matter as much, although, again, you know, you'd get some benefits from a newer processor. You certainly are buying at the beginning of the cycle. That means you'll have a longer time before it's obsolete, right? I recommend an i5 processor. I don't particularly go for the AMD processors, and I don't think an i3 from Intel is a good idea. They make those so that they have a very low price offering. But I think for most uses, an i5 is a good choice. 4 gigs of RAM is the minimum, but you don't need to spend a lot on memory, on RAM. I see people buying 16 and 32 gigs of RAM. It's a very small improvement after 8 gigs. So 4 is fine. 8 is a little better. But after 8, you know, unless you know what you're doing, you know you have some specialized applications, you don't need to get more than that. Now, the hard drive is an interesting question. If money is no object, I like the new solid-state drives, but they are more expensive. A number of notebooks are trying to kind of split the difference by offering an Intel technology, it's called Smart Response Technology, or SRT, that mixes a small, really tiny SSD solid-state drive with a spinning drive. It doesn't give you the same bang for your buck. Apple's Fusion is somewhat similar. It does not give you the same bang for your buck. If speed is important and money is available to buy it, because these are a little more expensive, I do think, and I certainly on all my new computers, solid-state drives, absolutely the way to go. What will happen is you'll get a smaller drive, like a 128-gig drive, and I would put Windows on that, let Windows boot from that, the applications, and then if you have the room, and some laptops do, for a second drive, use the second spinning drive for data. You'll see a huge improvement. A lot of times we focus on the processor speed as the most important factor in the speed of a computer, and frankly, nowadays it's not. The processors are so fast that it's other things like battery life, like better graphics, and faster input-output, or I/O, that makes such a difference in the speed of the computer. And solid-state drives, just huge difference. They'll speed up your booting time. It'll be seconds instead of minutes. They'll speed up application loads. Everything just seems to be snappier. I like a big screen. If you're getting a desktop, get the biggest screen you can afford. I like 27-inch screens. In fact, many of the people I know, photographers, videographers, and finance people, like dual screens. You have a spreadsheet spread off across two screens. If you can afford it, that's a nice way to go for a desktop. On the other hand, when it's a laptop, I don't worry about the screen size so much as the screen resolution. I like higher resolution laptops. A lot of these new Windows 8 laptops are 1366 by 768. I think that's awfully low. If you can afford it, again, if you can afford it, I'd get a 1920 by 1080 screen. That's a very high resolution. It's what Apple calls Retina display. It's such a high resolution, so fine a dot pitch that you can't see the dots, and that's good. It means the image is crisp and strong. Look at the display. You know, the display and the keyboard are the most important things on a laptop. That's what you spend most of the time with. So look at the display. Look at the keyboard. Consider weight, battery life. When it comes to manufacturers, you know, I just bought a Dell. I'm very happy, but I like Lenovo, Dell, Asus, A-S-U-S. All make excellent laptops. Now, when it comes to a printer, well, that's a little more choice there, because there are laser and inkjet printers. There are color and black and white printers. They're multifunction or single function printers. There are lots of choices. I use and generally recommend wireless printers, because then you could put them in the house or the office, connect them via Wi-Fi, and anything in the house can print to them without connecting, and that makes it a lot easier. I think the Epson Artisan printers are an excellent choice for that. Some of those are multifunction. They have scan capabilities and fax capabilities on some of them. That's kind of handy. The other question is, do you want to print photos? If you do, you're going to want to get an inkjet photo printer. If you don't, then you have to decide, do I still want color? In business, sometimes color is nice for graphs. In business in general, I like laser printers because the cost per page is lower. And there's some very good laser printers. Again, I use Epson. The Epson Workforce is a great inkjet printer. The Epson laser printers are great. HP also makes excellent laser printers. There's a lot of good choices out there. I know I haven't really narrowed it down much, but there's some basic rules of thumb for people who are in the market for a new computer or a new printer. This is a good time to buy. Wait till those fourth generation Intel chips comes out in the next few weeks. This would be a good time to buy. Richard in Youngstown, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
How you doing there, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm just fine. Hey, by the way, I'm a ham radio operator from Youngstown, Ohio, and I'm visually impaired, and I've got a question that I know you've got the answer to.
You sound like you're in the ham shack right now.
Well, yeah, I guess I am. Let me tell you what. First of all, let me tell you this first. I love my Ring Central.
Oh, that's great. One of our advertisers.
Oh, yeah. I love my Ring Central. And also, I just bought a Play 5, the Sonos players.
Oh, there's another. I wish I'd get them as an advertiser. They're getting a lot of free advertising from me. I love them. I know. They're great.
Those things are absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
But here's my little dilemma that I've got. On my network, I have the music for my music library. I've got it coming in through a Windows HP computer. And I also have, on the network, I have a NAS drive. It's a time capsule, which is, I'm sure you're very familiar with.
Yeah, that's the Apple backup solution.
Right. So I'm trying to figure out, how do I share my files from the disk on the NAS drive onto the Sonos player? Now, I thought that what you had to do was go to the Advanced tab on the airport utilities, and you click on files and sharing, and I believe, I'm somewhere at a miss at this point.
All right, so the time capsule is going to see the Sonos. So you go to the airport utility, and you click on the time capsule, you select edit, because the Apple's simple.
Right.
Oh, you're not on a Mac, though. You're on a Windows machine.
Correct. I have a Mac and a Mac Mini, but I'm not using them at the present time.
Well, use the Mac to set this up. Because the Apple saw, this is one of the reasons I don't generally recommend a time capsule. It's a Mac product. It's really designed to be set up for me.
I was using the iPhone to set it up. Will that still work?
Possible. I don't know. What you need to do is look for the Sonos on the time capsule.
Oh, okay.
And
it'll show up on the time capsule then?
Yeah, because the time capsule can see devices it can share to.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Okay, and you're going to get the address of it's complicated. I'll tell you what. It's on the Sonos website. Setting up an Apple time capsule with Sonos is on the Sonos website. They have a help file, and I would look at that. Because it's a little complicated. You got to get addresses and you got to put them in the Sonos. And but yes, you can set up the. So basically, the way the Sonos will work, and I found it to be kind of hit and miss, but it works. The way the Sonos works, I have it set up to look at my music library on my Macintosh using iTunes. Time Capsule is the same thing. It's an iTunes media server. What you'll do is you'll set up the Sonos to use that as your music library, and then you can play stuff from your music library. Little tricksy, but good news. Sonos has a complete help page on it. In fact, I'll put that in the show notes right now, so you can go there and click on that link. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your local news is next in another hour to come. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's hour number three of the Tech Guy program, in which we answer the critical question, what the heck? 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number if you're looking at your laptop or cell phone and saying, "What the heck?" Or you're,
what
or you're
happened to this thing?
What the what what? What the heck? So we got Trish, who called earlier in the show, join us in the chat room to give us an update. She was having the strangest thing. Her computer, you know, Firefox was launching. Her computer was typing gibberish, all sorts of weird stuff. And she was really afraid that she had a Trojan horse, something scary on her computer. She mentioned she'd had a wireless keyboard. She'd recently gone wired. I thought, well, that's good. But maybe the keyboard went haywire. So I said, well, you know what you should do is try the wireless keyboard again and see if it works all right with that. And she said, oh, yeah, it's just downstairs. I gave it to my kid. And a light went on. I said, is your kid playing with it? She said, yeah. So she just went in the chat room. She said, you nailed it, Leo. That's exactly what's going on. My kid, the wireless keyboard had still paired to the computer, and the kid was typing.
You are better than the FBI.
My daughter, the hacker.
Sussed that out.
Oh, that was fun. I love it when a story has a happy ending. Who should I talk to next, Heather Hayman?
Let's talk to Janet in Santa Monica.
That I can do. Thanks, yeah. Heather. Janet, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How are you?
Hey, Leo, I'm terrific. Hey. I definitely have a what the heck for you today.
All righty.
About 20 years ago, I started writing funny stories about my quest to find the perfect baby stroller. And pretty soon, I started getting discovered by the media.
Awesome.
And they thought I was a blogger.
Yes, because you've been doing this on the web, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so they said to put up a website, so I hastily threw up a website that was strollerqueen.com. And over the years, it didn't serve my purposes. It couldn't put, you know, use the video and the things I wanted. So I went to Blogspot. So now I wound up with several names. And the main name is strollerqueenreviews.blogspot.com, which is a crazy, long, ridiculous name. And I'd like to consolidate everything to StrollerQueen.com. However, right now with StrollerQueenReviews.blogspot.com, I'm ranking pretty high in Google and Alexa.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with it, do you?
Right. But
yeah.
Saying, oh, that's a terrible name. You know, it's too long and the advertisers won't take it and all that.
Well, it's certainly StrollerQueen.com is awesome. And I would keep that. But that's also on Blogger, isn't it? Or is it somewhere else? Where's Stroller Queen?
I have my website through register.com.
Oh, I see at the bottom. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, it got knocked offline during Hurricane Sandy, and I never bothered to put it back up because I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
So
you do want to keep, you do, okay, so here's what you can do. There's a couple of things you can do. You can set it up so that strollerqueenreviews.blogspot.com automatically responds to StrollerQueen.com. In other words, get down, take the register.com down, transfer it over. Actually, you can keep it at register.com, but just don't use their hosting. Use Blogspot's hosting. And in the Blogspot settings, you can automatically have it point to StrollerQueen.com.
Okay, because right now I have StrollerQueen.com pointing to Stroller Reviews. And if you go on the ranking for StrollerQueen.com, it's like 3 million or something ridiculous. And then StrollerQueenReviews.blogspot.com is showing a ranking of
100,000. Yeah, you know, and people Google says, well, we don't favor Google sites. But whenever somebody says, I want to make a site that Google really sees, I say, well, do it on Google's own property, blogger.com. Because, you know, you're kind of guaranteed Google's going to see that. But you can, in your settings, go to your Blogspot settings, your blogger.com settings.
Okay.
And have it auto, you'll have to change, you'll have to go to the register.com domain management as well.
Okay.
Blogger will explain how to do this. It's going to give you two strange entries with lots of characters and stuff that you change your DNS settings at register.com. It sounds complicated. It actually is pretty straightforward. You follow the instructions on blogger.com and it'll walk you through it. That okay. What you're going to do is that when people go to Blogger, let's see, StrollerQueen.com, they get sent to this Blogger site. And
yeah.
You can even have the Blogger site look like it's StrollerQueen.com. Google will understand this. It will not, I don't think it'll affect your ranking.
Okay?
So it's a domain name redirection, and it shouldn't affect your ranking. In fact, the Google rankings should slowly amend themselves to make sure that this works.
Okay. And can I add some other ones in there as well? Because I also have like StrollerQueen.StrollerReviews. I don't know how.
No, and in fact, I would settle on StrollerQueen.com. It's the shortest.
Yes.
And I would just make sure that that's it from going forward. That part of the problem, part of the reason the ranking's not good is you have too many sites. The way Google ranks you up is by other people linking to you. You want to get everybody to link to the same site.
Uh-huh.
So from now on, have everybody link to StrollerQueen.com. Because that's a great name.
Thank you.
That's a really good name.
Thanks.
All right, can you make a living doing this?
Well, maybe if you can answer my second question, I can.
By the way, how old's the kid now?
Well, I have three of them. They just keep coming along.
Oh, that's good. So you continue to do research.
Exactly.
Have you seen the stroller? Natalie Morris was just on our show. Have you seen the stroller that unfolds itself?
Yes, I have.
That is wild. It's like an alien.
Yeah, except it doesn't work most of the time.
Right. Right. This is why you need Stroller Queen reviews.
Exactly. And I can tell you what works and what doesn't.
This turns out to be a giant category. So good.
Yeah,
so let's make some money for you. Make this a business. So what's your other question?
Well, then how do I get advertising? How do I go about that? Because the few that I've approached don't like that name, StrollerQueenReviews.blogspot.com. And then when I show them StrollerQueen.com, they said that's too low in the rankings.
Well, just say it's the same site and the rankings will all be fine. And you can let Google sell this too, by the way. Just put Google AdSense on. But I think it's not going to be too hard for you to monetize this. You're doing the hard thing, which is go out to the advertisers directly.
Is there another way?
Well, yeah, put AdSense on there right away. That's something you can do. Do you have Google's ads on here, AdSense? I don't see them.
So
put that on here. That'll generate at least a few hundred dollars a month, if not more. Just look at AdSense.Google.com.
Well, I have, but it says my account is not valid, and no matter how many times I email them about it, they won't answer.
Really?
I swear to you, this has been going on for a long time. They said it's not a valid site, it's not a valid account.
Well, create a new one then.
Okay.
Yeah, start over. But that's bizarre. Since you are on Blogspot and you're generating a lot of traffic on Blogspot, it seems like they should be able to see that.
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking about ad sales, you can call somebody for ad sales. They want to sell. They want to sell ads. So they actually have active salespeople. I have people all call me all the time. You know, you really should be from Google. I think, Google called me, and then it's just some ad salesman. You can maybe get that fixed. But there are other ad networks, if not that one, that you could put on there as well. There's got to be a way through this. You should be. I mean, if you're driving traffic on this, and I bet you are, you should be able to do this.
I should be, because I had a Yahoo group that had 11,000 members.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You know, this is a. You know, there are books on AdSense. I would go to Amazon and look up the books on AdSense. A friend of mine wrote one. I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but you want to master this. Mastery of AdSense, mastery of this is very valuable. Could be your business.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a number of books on AdSense.
Okay.
Google AdSense Secrets was, I think, the one that I remember. But any of these would probably do the job. Hey, good luck. This is great. StrollerQueen.com. Go there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, here he comes. He's gonna fix your computer. I don't know. I turn every song into my own. Heather, who should I talk to here?
Okay, let's try Matthew in France. I have to say,
like France, or France, yeah. Kentucky, France,
Europe,
France,
he
Europe.
Was a little muddy to me, but I think he'll sound better to
All
you.
Right, let's try it and see. We have our new Telos VX system that really does sound good. I have to say, it sounds so much better.
Well, this will test its boundaries.
This is he's probably on Skype.
Yes, he is.
Mathieu, comment ça va?
Hi, how are you? I've always wanted to speak to you. And by the way, I'm British. How you doing, mate? Cheers. So you're on, you know what it is, the sound I think is from the headset that you're using. What are you using for a headset?
I'm actually using I tried using my webcam mic and Sennheiser headphones, but that didn't work for Heather, and I'm just using the internal mic.
Yeah, it's fine. It's just, it's a little muddy, but it's not bad. And you're on Skype?
Yep, on Skype, going awesome. All the way from near Cannes. I stayed next to the Cannes Film Festival during the week.
I'm so jealous. You went to the festival?
No, I live near it.
Oh, I'm so jealous. So you live in France, and you do it just because you're happy?
Yeah, I've been here for 8 years.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what can I do to help you?
Yeah, well...
I know what you can do to help me. I'll be there in a moment. Let me just get a plane ticket.
Yeah, get a plane ticket. About 6 months ago, I entered the world of custom PCs, and I have slightly in part to thank OMG Chad for that.
What's your name in chat?
Hamiltus. I'm the one.
Oh, Hamiltus. We were just talking to you. Yeah.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah. Basically, I built my first PC about 6 months ago, but unfortunately, it's on the fritz.
Yeah, and this is the problem. Now, building your own PC is very gratifying, and it's fun. It's like making IKEA furniture. You have a certain proprietary ownership in the device, however boxy and improbable it is. The negative, is if it goes wrong, who do you call? Who are you going to call? You're the warranty. So do you know what went wrong?
I have a hunch of what it is. Okay. Basically, I'll give you a quick rundown of the specs. It's a i5-3570K, the unlocked one, and I've overclocked it to 4.2 gigahertz.
Ah, you're overclocking it. When you run it at normal, at rated speed, does it work better?
That's not the problem, actually. It's the power supply. It's basically,
Tell me the symptoms.
Basically, a month ago, it shut down, and it won't turn on with the power button.
Okay.
But they will work with the power switch, the power switch in the back of the power supply?
Right.
They're like rocking that back and forth, and it'll come on. But that's a very dangerous game. Don't do that.
It won't. You don't flip it once. You flip it back and forth a few times.
Yes.
Yeah.
But now it's dead. It's not working. I'm not using it. I can't use it.
Right.
My main thing is it either dead or is it...
Well, it could be a number of things. It could just be the switch on the front, and that's a cheap, easy part to replace. You built the thing. All that switch on the front does is connect to a jumper on the motherboard.
Yeah, but main thing is it's a, like I said, i5, a GTX 670.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that stuff. I don't know how valuable or important that is.
No, it's not that. It's just the fact that it's only 650 watts.
First of all, replacing a power supply, as you probably know, is cheap. You probably got it with the case, but you can take it out of the case. Don't open the power supply, by the way. There's capacitors in there that'll send you flying.
It's a Corsair one, so I've got 7 year warranty. Unfortunately, they say you pay for the shipping.
And you're in France, so yeah, Corsair's great stuff, but it sounds like that failed. To be honest with you. The rocking it back and forth is a little weird. That seems to me, Ned, there's something wrong with the power supply. If it were just a switch on the front, then you wouldn't need to do anything. I would say just order a new power supply. Paul Shadwell in our chat room, who you can talk to, says, I had the same thing. It was the power supply. It was easy to fix. They are modular. You may buy them with the case, but they're easy enough, just a few screws, and you can pull them out. Do make sure you get a power supply that has the right connections for what you need. Hamilton, I know your bandwidth's about to die on you, so continue the conversation in the chat room. How about that? 8888 ask Leah. Let's say hi to Mark. Joe in San Dimas, California. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Mr. LaFleur. Thanks for taking my call, sir.
Thanks for calling.
I have a question. I finally upgraded from a Nokia 5310 Express Music that I had for almost 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And then this past December, I upgraded to a Samsung Galaxy S Blaze 4G with T-Mobile.
Yay.
You understandably already know that T-Mobile now carries the iPhone 5.
Yes, they do.
And like a lot of other people, I thought my mouth watered when I saw the sign. So I was thinking, what should I do to switch in? I talked to the people there, and I could get a good trade-in value, but the catch is, and let me just see it here. The catch is it's not for, like, the 32-gig, understandably. It is for the 16-gig iPhone 5, whereas with my current Android phone, I'm still on Gingerbread. I haven't upgraded the OS yet. I can, still get an SD card and upgrade the memory that
right.
way. My question to you is it worth it for me to go through the transition from the Android to the iPhone, or would it be better that I upgrade the OS and then get an SD card and work with that?
Just depends how much you want an iPhone. I mean, a 16-gig iPhone, you're right, it's not a lot of storage, although these days a lot of people don't even put music or videos or stuff on their phone. They just stream the things. And with T-Mobile, you're going to get unlimited data, so that may not even be a negative for you. I can't answer that question for you. It depends how much you want an iPhone. Now, T-Mobile, I have a Galaxy S4 on T-Mobile. They have Galaxy S4s. They have lots of other current phones. The HTC One is also amazing. I'm not a big – these days, I have an iPhone 5. I rarely use it because I really like what Android phones are doing today.
Wow.
So you already are using Android. You're using a very old version of Android. You would be, I think, favorably impressed by the newer versions of Android. You'd jump to Jelly Bean if you used either the HTC One or the Galaxy S4.
Yeah.
I think that makes a big difference. The negative is that Android phones, yes, you could put SD cards in. Actually, you can't on the HTC One, but let's say the Galaxy 4. But you can't do everything that you'd like to do with that storage. It's not like it just extends the phone's built-in memory. It doesn't. It's only for storing music and photos and, data, podcasts, things like that. So, the Galaxy S4 is an example. The 16-gig version has about 8 free when you get it. You rapidly fill that up with applications. And having an SD card is not much of a benefit.
Yeah, that's what I've been finding out.
Yeah, so I'm not sure that the SD card is a huge benefit either. What I did with the HTC One is I bought the biggest they had, the 64 gig. That's all one contiguous piece of memory, so I don't have to worry. I don't know. It depends how much you want the iPhone.
Yeah.
It really comes down to that. And in my opinion, the iPhone is getting a little... long in the tooth. We will see a new phone from Apple in the next few months. Maybe wait for that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. She blinded me with her cell phone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was telling the story in the chat room over the break about a horrid experience with AT&T that my ex-wife Jennifer has been going through for the last 3 months. She lost her iPhone. And we talked yesterday about the extended warranties and so forth. And I've always said, don't buy those. They're a scam. AT&T sells third-party insurance through a company called Asurion, which I can assure you it's a terrible idea. She spends $10 a month for this insurance. There's a $199 deductible. She lost her iPhone in March. Filed a claim through AT&T. She went to the AT&T store. Here we are, June, no phone. I looked on her bill. It had been canceled. She's been into the AT&T store 4 or 5 times and still no replacement phone. 3 months later. So we canceled that Asurion. And I can only tell all of you listening, it's I think, a big mistake to buy third-party insurance. And certainly if you're an AT&T customer, the third-party insurance from Asurion is horrible, horrible, terrible. Now, a number of people in the chat room said, no, I got my phone replaced, and a number of people said, no, I had problems. Now, I'm not saying that they're probably 100% terrible, but if you buy insurance and you spend a lot of money, $120 a year for this insurance, plus $200 deductible, and they're only good 50% of the time, that's horrible. Even if they're only good 80% of the time, that's horrible. When you spend that kind of money, you shouldn't have to wait 3 months for a replacement phone. AT&T either should do third party, should not use a third party, should do the insurance themselves, or part company with Asurion. Terrible experience, just the worst. So if you're you're in the mood to buy a phone, do not. I mean, in general, I don't insure them. I think it's always third party insurance. It's a big profit center. Let's put it that way. 8888-ASK-LEO. To my surprise, when we went in there, I said, well, look, let's just get you a phone so you have a phone. Instead of buying another iPhone, Jennifer, boy, this to me, this is a bellwether for Apple. She bought an Android, a Galaxy S4. Wow. Wow. I'm starting to see a lot of people move because, you know, Apple is not updating these phones but once a year, and the market's moving faster. There's new stuff on a lot of these phones. Now, some of the things on the Galaxy S4 she wasn't interested in. I said, look, see, it's got this, Samsung has this S-Health program, and you just keep the phone in your pocket, and it's a pedometer, and it'll measure how many calories you burn and how many steps. She said, I don't want to know that. I said, but it's really cool, and it's in your pocket. It's always measured. I don't want to know that. Okay. So I didn't turn that on. See, I've taken 1,684 steps today, and I didn't even have to wear anything on my wrist. Good camera. You know, I'm kind of torn. I have both an HTC One running on AT&T's network, which I really like, and a Galaxy S4 running on T-Mobile. And both of them are just great phones, and I can't decide which to stick with. There's advantages and disadvantages to both. There is no perfect phone. So to answer our last caller's question, I can't tell you to, you know, get the iPhone, 16-gig iPhone. I can't even tell you if 16 gigs is enough memory. It really is very individual. All I can say is good news. We have lots of choices now. Not just phones, but carriers, and take advantage of it. Find something that fits you. Mark, and don't buy the third-party insurance from AT&T. Mark in Canoga Park, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I have a laptop, HP, with Windows 7, and I needed to find out if you had advice on internet security. A friend of mine told me about Avast.
Avast is a free company that, well, it's freemium. They have a free offering that a lot of people use, and then they kind of encourage you to buy the paid antivirus. Our advertiser, I'll just tell you who our advertiser is, and it's a company I've recommended for many years, long before they started advertising, is a company called ESET, ESET. And their antivirus for Windows is Nod 32, highly recommended. Now, if you don't want to, that's a paid company, it's a paid service. If you don't want to pay the $30 or $40 a year for that, I don't recommend Avast as a free choice. Microsoft has its own free choice called Microsoft Security Essentials. And while it's not as good as a paid antivirus, it's better than Avast. It's Microsoft.com/Security Essentials. So start with that. Don't use Avast. And if you're willing to pay a few bucks, get Nod 32. It really it's my preferred choice. And the disclaimer is, of course, that they're an advertiser as well. Tom in Irvine, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I have a rather early stage Sony camcorder, HD camcorder, and it has its video output is FireWire. And I have a PC, two PCs. They're rather new, with no FireWire capability. They're all USB. And I was wondering, is there any kind of a conversion from FireWire to USB that would work for my problem?
Yeah, you don't want USB. It's not fast enough. So FireWire is much, much faster. So yeah. We actually talked to somebody yesterday with exactly the same issue. In fact, it was even a Sony camcorder. The best way to do this would be to buy a FireWire card for your PC. They're not very expensive. And then you can import the video at full speed with full quality. USB is not a good solution. There are – is your camcorder digital or analog? Do you know?
I don't know the answer. I'm going to guess it's digital. So it's digital on the
board. So was his. And for that reason, the best solution is to buy a PCI card, a FireWire card.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to degrade it to analog and then digitize it again, which is another option. But that's going to degrade the quality.
Yeah, and I've got another problem because both of my PCs, one is a Dell sealed unit where the PCB is actually behind the screen. And I don't think there's a place for a card. Maybe there is. And then my other is a HP laptop.
Yeah, so neither one is openable. Those Dell all-in-ones are not openable.
Yeah, so I guess I'm going to have to try something else here.
Well, the other way to go is what you just described, but it's going to degrade the quality considerably.
Yeah.
So there are companies that make these converters, and what they end up doing is recompressing it, because you can't get it over the USB at full speed. Now these are new. Do you have USB 3?
I don't know. I mean,
USB 2 wasn't fast enough, but I think USB 3 probably. Let me see if there's a FireWire to USB 3 converter, because that would be a good choice.
Okay. They're new within a year.
Yeah, so it's hit and miss. USB 3 is pretty common now, but a year ago it was a little bit less so. So one way to tell is the connector, the inside of the USB port is blue, not white.
Okay, blue.
If you see a blue USB connector inside your Dell, your XPS, then I think buying a FireWire to USB will be fine.
Okay, great.
That's fast enough. That's the issue, is speed. So what happens is you press play on the camcorder, and it starts feeding tons of data down that FireWire port, and it hits the USB converter, and the thing says, oh, whoa, and it has to just squish it down a whole lot. If you have a card bus, an express card, a PCMCIA slot on your laptop, if you have a PCI slot on your desktop, best way to do this is to get a FireWire connector. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's see. Let's take another one. I feel good now. We're doing good. Savara in Oslo, Norway. Hello, Savara.
Hey, Leo. Can you hear me fine?
I hear you great from Oslo. That's fantastic.
I just, I'm talking to you on a mic that you kind of, sort of, in a way, helped me get. I asked you on Twitter what mic to get, and you said there wasn't really any other good mics than the one you're using. But I think I found one.
You sound great. Well, what mic are you on?
I think it's called the H2N.
Oh, yes. Chris Marquardt likes that, too. I have one of those. It's a very nice mic. Now, we got to take a break. I hope you're on Skype, but we'll come back in just a minute. Don't go anywhere. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I feel like you like Blondie, Heather.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to grow up to be her.
We'll call you Heather Harry from now on.
Okay.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The tide is... See, I could still talk up a... I could talk up an intro. You never lose that ability. I don't know why it is, but you never lose that ability. As a DJ, you know, that's the whole thing. When in the old days, nobody does this anymore because people want to hear the music.
Yeah, so most people don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but in the old days in radio, when you were a boss jock, you know, 59 degrees in the city. It's 6:34 a.m. Under sunny skies. The phrase that pays is keep calm and coat on. And now Deborah Harry, and you can always tell they're going to talk up to the vocals because they'll start to slow down.
Well, that's when you're not that good at
that good.
But tell everybody what that's called, right?
What is it called?
Did you forget?
Talking up the post is what I call
hitting
it.
Hitting the post.
Hitting the
like
post.
Like if you nail it.
Yeah. I nailed the post, man. It's funny, though. Once you learn that skill, it's in your head. And I still find myself doing it, even though it's not even a music show. Who should I talk to? We only got a few more. Oh, wait a minute. I had somebody online. I forgot Mr. Oslo. Svara. Am I saying your name right, Svara?
Yeah, it's quite good, actually.
Yeah. I was in Norway last spring, and I had a wonderful, wonderful time.
I wanted to meet with you when you were in Oslo, but... I don't know.
We were there for 5 minutes. That's why. We got to the airport... Got on a plane to Kristiansund, flew back. We took the train to Bergen, we took the boat to Bergen and then the train to Oslo, and then we flew home. So really, we weren't in Oslo for very long. But boy, is that a beautiful country! Yeah, I loved it. Wonderful time.
Quite picturesque. It was a photo festival, wasn't it?
It was. In fact, they just had another one, the Northern Lights Festival in Kristiansund, not Kristiansand.
Yeah, exactly.
way over on the west coast, and it's a little remote, but it was beautiful. It's where they make the klippfisk, the dried cod, that is Norway so famous for.
Yeah, well, it's not the best. I heard you talk about it. I'm not a big fan.
you're not a big fan, huh? I tell you, the most beautiful city I saw was Bergen. That is a gorgeous city.
Yeah, I think it's the oldest city in Norway.
Yeah, it's very medieval. And the train Highly recommend. If you ever get a chance to take the train from Bergen to Oslo, it was still snowy. And in fact, we went through the area where they shot the ice planet of Hoth in the Star Wars movies. And it was still and it was still frozen. But that's neither here nor there. What can I do for you, Svara?
Well, I have a question. I've been trying to figure this out for a few weeks, but I've been unable to do it, and I've been trolling forums and all this. So this is kind of my last resort here.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm kind of inspired by you, like originally, and I wanted to set up sort of a home studio kind of thing.
Great.
I hadn't really a specific purpose, but then I got a purpose, and then I wanted high quality. So I got a, I went ahead and I got a Canon D5, or 5D, I mean.
Very nice, and, yeah.
Yeah, I went for the cheap glass and the expensive camera, and then later I'm going to upgrade.
Perfect.
So, and then I got a lighting system and eventually a mic, like I talked
about. What is your show going to be about?
No, I'm kind of in the talks. It's a regular... TV, I don't know. It's kind of early, so I don't want to promote anything.
Okay, okay.
It's
not about, is it about tech or not?
No, it's finance.
All right. No, you need to say no more, but I'm just thrilled. That's great.
Yeah.
This is what's so exciting to me about the new media. It's very democratizing for, you know, you spend money, but for a few thousand bucks, you have a studio that's going to look every bit as good as a professional broadcast studio.
Yeah, that's I've shot some videos, and I mean, you get the film kind of quality.
It probably looks better than television. That's right, because of the 5D. Yeah,
yeah.
And, high def. Just
I don't
gorgeous.
Know if that's a bad or good thing. That's
I think it's good, and I'll tell you why. Because it attracts the eye. You look at it, and you go, "There's something different about this show."
Yeah, but it's a two film. Maybe it's two film. I don't know.
Nah, you know, I don't think so. I think people aren't that analytic. They're not going to say, "Oh, yes, he shot this with the." Some people will. I will. Oh, he shot this with the DSLR, and I see their very shallow depth of field. He's obviously using an f/50 lens at a 2.0. Yeah. Oh, I could tell. But that doesn't matter, because what most people are going to do is say, "I don't know what it is about this, but it looks good, and I feels good," and that's really what you're going for. You know,
but that's what I'm going for, and it's easy when I do the pre-production, but we're still not sure if I'm going to do sort of live segments or...
Live, you can't really do very well with the 5D, I don't think, but anyway.
That's my question, because, I mean, there are hacks you can do.
Yeah.
You sort of do the screen capture and then...
Yeah, you don't want to do that. There are cameras that have that HDMI out as live. That's not one of them.
Well, I guess the Mark III, I guess you have HDMI out as live.
There you go. That would be a good upgrade.
But do you know, because there are some boxes, like Blackmagic boxes you can put between the camera and the computer?
Yeah.
Do you know?
It's not made for live because, for one thing, after about 20 minutes, it stops down. You can only shoot a certain amount of video.
Yeah.
If I were going to, I would do something different if I were going to do live. In fact, Blackmagic makes some inexpensive cameras that will use the same lenses.
Really?
Yeah, that has HDMI out. That
the might new be. Cameras?
The new Blackmagic cinema cameras. Cheap, but a lot less. And you know, they're 4K cameras, very high quality cameras, and they have Canon mounts.
Yeah, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
do you think I should switch? Because this, I mean, you can resell a camera so easily.
Yeah, and I don't think. Yeah, well, if it depends on how important live is, you're going to get great. So there's two ways to do video, folks. You could do live, which is what we do, where we're on camera as we speak, or you could do it in post-production, where you shoot it like a movie, and then you edit it, and you release it that way. And for the latter, for post-production, there's nothing. The 5D is fantastic. Not great for live.
No. It's an all-purpose camera. I mean, when you do other photographic stuff, I mean, it's great to have it.
Oh, I love the camera.
Pick up a 5D. And,
I would continue to look into ways to do it live, but my sense is you'd be better off using a camera that is designed for live video. You know, our cameras are on 24/7. They don't overheat after 20 minutes. They don't shut off. That's what the 5D does, because it wasn't designed to shoot for long periods of time. 4 gig limit per clip, that's another issue. You can only get 4 gigabytes at a time. Burke's telling me the GF20, that's what we're using right now. This is a Canon Vixia video camera, and it looks great, but it doesn't have that fine bokeh. If you really want, and that's why I think the Blackmagic might be a good choice, because it uses those same lenses, so you can get that great depth of field. So, all right, good luck. When you're ready to launch and tell us more, come back on, and we'll give you a plug. That's great. Brian, San Juan Capistrano, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, yes, Brian. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. My question for you is, which phone service do you recommend better, AT&T or Sprint?
It really depends where you are. So Sprint has unlimited data. I like Sprint if you've got good carriage, but I don't have it here, so I don't use a Sprint phone. They have LTE in some areas. I don't know if San Juan Capistrano is one of them. If they don't have LTE, I wouldn't recommend Sprint. AT&T, PC Magazine yearly does a rating of speeds. But remember, it's all very geographically specific. But as a whole, nationwide, AT&T is the fastest LTE service, beating Verizon, surprisingly. And Sprint is a weak fourth. But that is really, you know, a national average. That's not what you're going to get. You're going to get what you get in San Juan Capistrano. So you really got to ask people in your town, what do you use? How's Sprint for you? In general, unfortunately, I think Sprint's not great. However, the good news is they've just been acquired or about to be acquired by a big Japanese company, and I have a feeling that there'll be some big infrastructure investments. And that Clearwire, which was really horrible 4G, will be replaced by LTE and more places. And then maybe they got something. Right now, I'd have to say I'd prefer AT&T in almost everywhere. Almost everywhere. All of our show notes, everything we do is put up on the internet, where it is easily searchable and findable at any time of the day or night at techguylabs.com. Please do stop by there. And, you know, we take a video of the show and we put that up after the fact, as well as audio. You can hear each question and answer pair. And each question and answer pair will have an area for you to comment. So your input is greatly valued. We really appreciate it. Josh Windisch does that in my office. James DeRuvo, thank you. He's been taking notes all through the show and puts those up quickly so you can get something right away. If you hear something and you want to know more, just visit techguylabs.com. You can also get to the chat room from there. And I do thank all the folks in the chat room, as always. They're a very big help. And, of course, thanks to Heather Hammond, who has been there doing everything to make this show better. This is a much better show now that you're helping me with the calls. Thank you. I appreciate it, Heather.
My 12th show.
This is your 12th show. Yeah. Well, let's celebrate.
Okay.
Let's do another one next week. How about that? We'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.